Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Welcome back to More To It, the show that takes a deep dive into the biggest stories in sports, entertainment, and culture. Start with headline news and then journey to deeper conversations. Always finding those life lessons that are presented in every single story. I'm your host, Marcel Swally. That dude.
Yeah, baby. Almost spinning. They spinning. What's up, y'all? Y'all know what this is. It's Never Shut Up, baby, where we learn those life lessons through entertainment and sports while covering the media like no one else, man. Love for you guys as you got love for your boy out here. And you know how we start off every show. Well, what's up with that dude? Well, yesterday, I continued on my journey of weight loss through natural ways of losing weight because I was sick. Man, I was, woo! Every hole I had, something was coming. Let me stop. All right, so basically I was just throwing up and leaking, and it was bad. But I'm good now. It passed through, your boy. It was all good. I did not eat all day yesterday. And then last night my wife was like, have you eaten? And I was like, no. And that was all I needed to hear. I don't know what she said to me other than that, but it just sounded like she said, go get something to eat. So all I had was some chicken noodle soup. What is it about? What did they do to us growing up? What did Campbell's do to us? I was like, I ain't had no chicken noodle soup in forever. And frankly, I wasn't even craving it. But it just felt like I'm sick. I need chicken noodle soup. And it hit the spot. I opened up three cans of that thing, too. I ain't finished all three, but two and a half. I was in the zone, y'all. Oh, man. Other than that, yesterday we had practice. My son's basketball practice. So long story short, he switched where he's playing basketball. Let me tell you how it starts. This is how it starts. We started off, okay, he can't play for his school because his school, let's just say, is athletically challenged. Academically inclined and athletically challenged. These little kids, all of them got left feet and like four of them, not even two of them, four of them, right? So they all good kids, but very few athletes there, very few, but they're there. So we're like not playing at school. So then you don't play at the school, you go to the local park, right? And then you find a convenient park around you and you just hope. And there were some good kids there. The rules and some of the issues there made us say we need a little different level of competition, a little more focus, and let them play basketball more. It was turning into football out there a little bit, you know, local stuff. So all right, Matt. Then we drive way out, like 20, 30 minutes. So we go to the Sports Academy, which is really good. It's what Kobe Bryant owned at first, the Mamba Academy. Then they sold that after his death, and now it's called the Sports Academy. You walk up in there, you literally think you're at the NBA combines. It's like for eight-year-olds. It's like 9,000 kids playing basketball. But what I love about it is, one, as soon as you see that, you realize, oh, you ain't the only one that want this. That's good. That's a good lesson. Second thing is, you see the level of competition, you're like, these kids can play. Cats doing behind the back, doing step backs, doing Euro steps at this age, it's fun. But MJ out there balling, y'all. MJ big, man. He a youngster for his age group. Like, he eight, but he a young eight. He good. He getting good. It's fun to see because He's stepping up to what's surrounding him. He's like, oh, y'all want to do that? I'm going to do that plus some. And then they do something, and they try to plus him, and then it's just that good osmosis going on. So it's fun to see. So went through that. It was good. Me and Jesse, our coach, we got a good squad. We undefeated. We playing an undefeated team this weekend on Friday. Wish us well. Then I was driving home from practice, and I was listening to a show that I like, and it's actually the Stephen A. Smith Show, which is his podcast. So I was listening to that, and I'm a big Stephen A. Smith fan. I know a lot of people think I got smoke with him. I don't do smoke, y'all. I do the truth, and then that's it. I'm good. I'm going to speak to you. If you don't like me, that's a one-way street. I still mess with you. So I still listen to his show, and I was listening to his show, and I caught some sneak dissing, right? So now, I don't want Stephen A. Smith to respond to me. I'm just telling y'all how I am. This is me to y'all, not me to him. I don't need a response. I'm not built for that. I'm not in that game. But I heard him sneak dissing, and he was talking about people, and it's kind of like how you talk about horoscopes. You ever read a horoscope? And it's so general that it could mean everybody. But it's so specific that you think they're talking to you, and you're like, wait a minute. So I'm not a fan of sneak dissing. If he's talking about me, he is. If he's not, oh well. My bad. I take all this back, right? So here's the thing. My coach always told me, say names and numbers. So when I talk about somebody, I'm always going to say their name and number, even though they my friend, even though I'm a fan of them, even though I like them. I don't care. I'm going to say your name and number because I ain't playing that game. You know, that game, because that game is the one that gets twisted. You know, that's throwing your rocks and high. I'm throwing the rocks and high in your hands, you know. That's how things get really confused out here. I ain't got no problem with Stephen A. Smith and or his fans. Y'all can stop beating him up in his comments and y'all can stop coming over here saying when you gonna say something else about him or the only thing you do is talk about him. I don't. I got a lot of topics. Y'all like the Stephen A. Smith topics. We know why. So all good, all love, always gonna support him as long as he doing what he's doing because I like what he does. That's it. All right, y'all know this show. It's powered by Project Transition, and it's powered by you. So you guys go out there, log on to projecttransition.org, and you will get this book if you leave a recurring donation. Simple as that. Or just join the team. You're like, man, I ain't giving you no recurring donation. I'm just going to leave my email. Perfect. You're part of the team. Let's go out there and support the itty-bitties in the community. Got to get their inner power up, right, and develop it so they can display it for the world so that they can be greater than their greatest excuse. Love for all you guys who are doing that. I see it every single day, the donations piling in. Make sure I can say your name tomorrow like I'm going to say Mike Shepherd, who is from Arlington, Virginia. Salute to you, man. Saw you leaving some love for the itty-bitties and our efforts in the community. Also, Edward Speed from Wheat Ridge, Colorado. You know that sucker like to ski. I don't know where Wheat Ridge is, but it sounds like a ski place. And another Mr. Anonymous. I love this Anonymous. Only thing is like, I'm trying to thank you too. And you're like, nah, I'm good. I don't need no thanks. You're bigger than me. I would love to thank you. And a large donation you left as well. We appreciate it. All right. Speaking of people I love and people I know and I rock with, I got to talk about my boy right now, Anthony Mackie. Yes, y'all know who Anthony Mackie is. All the way back to, what was that, 8 Mile? All the way to now, he is Captain America. And that's the homie. But he unsparked the debate after refusing to take a picture with a young fan. Think the little kid was 11, even though he'd been eating like he'd been here longer than 11. That's a little big kid. Here we go. So there was video footage of the incident. They shared it online. Look, when I first read the headline, I was like, oh, here we go. I hate entitled ass fans. I hate entitled people, but fans especially. But let me get into that later. So I judged this story before I even read it, but I said, let me read through it and give y'all the real dope on it. So he initially denied a request for a picture with a young little kid, right? And then the video gained attention. Everybody started talking about it. And basically how the beats of it was, a woman named Andra shared her frustration online because she stated that she went up to Anthony Mackie to take a picture with her son, knowing already that Anthony Mackie doesn't take pictures with kids. That's what she said. And then Andra's mother, she went up there, took the young boy, because you know her grandma's be like, I wear him down with this sweetness, right? I go up there with that love. He can't say no to me. I'm an elder, right? And Mackie still declined. So then a few former fans, you know how it goes. Whenever you got a narrative out there, people going to go, oh. So now former fans, I don't know why they former fans. Oh, Anthony Mackie dissed me too. He dissed me too. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that's how it went down. Now, I'm not going to character assassinate the lady, even though there's some pictures and some discovery of her online that says, Anthony Mackie shouldn't be the role model for your kid. You should be, because you need to fix your life. But I digress, even though I already went there, huh? Here we go. Let me talk about the word entitled in this situation. We know where fans are coming from. Hey, I pay your salary, man. I support your movies. I watch you. So you know what? When I get to see you in real life, I know it ain't on the screen, but guess what? You and I gonna have a one-on-one. You and I gonna break this little barrier right now, this privacy that you are protected with when you're doing your job, and that's why I really love you. Oh, I'm gonna show you all that in public. Okay, so fans walk up to you empowered, entitled, because they pay for the tickets, right? They show the love. They got the fanfare, the fandemonium. They're fanatics. They buy the merch. They do all those things to support you. And I think people get it lost. You don't know that person. You know what that person is doing. So all of that energy is directed and supporting what they're doing. But do not make the miscalculation of when you see them out in public that they are doing what you are supporting. No, this is a whole different animal now, right? It's like seeing a football player play the game. Ah! Then he take off his clothes. You better not walk up to him going, ah, maybe you could, maybe you don't, but don't expect you're gonna get the answer and response that you desire. Cause he ain't doing that no more. He ain't turning the corner no more to get a sack. He trying to get into the car and strap on the seatbelt, and you stopping the car door from closing. Cause you gotta make sure you show him how much you love him. Show him how much you love him by how much he's doing on his job, at his job. On the screen, on the field. But when it comes to the real world experience, you gotta let that go. And I understand that people don't want to hear that, right? I understand that people are like, yo, what's up with that? Why not? Now, let me give you guys some ammunition. I do it to a fault almost, ask my wife. I always give fans autographs, pictures, etc. And I don't do it to hear everyone say, you're so down to earth, or you're so nice, you're so approachable. No, frankly, I got the disease of loving people. I just love people. I don't care who you are. I chop up wood with anybody. My boys know it. They hate it. We used to always go out, and they'd be like, why are you sitting there talking to this dude? You just met him. Like, we about to go in there. And I'm like, I know. After I talked to this dude I just met. Now, you know what I mean? I'm just built that way. But that doesn't mean everybody should be, and that certainly doesn't mean I'm better than somebody else. Anthony Mackie deserves his private time. I've hung out with Mackie. We were just in Vegas a couple months ago. It's a thing. It's a thing for him. It's a thing for me, but it's a different thing for him because he's Captain America. But damn it, he ain't saving the planet when he out there just chilling in New Orleans and you run up to him with your kid. And this is a bad part of it. You got that kid gassed up. This kid is leaving videos talking about how disappointed he was. Who appointed that kid to think he can run up to a celebrity and think he gets what he wants? That's called entitlement. And that's not the positive way of how you should look at entitlement. You should give that kid, as I just read this in a different lane, kids need to be prepared in an honest, realistic fashion by their parents. Parents need to make sure you tell your kids everything real and everything honestly. Give you an example. Walking around telling your kids that words don't hurt is a lie. They do hurt. Because if one tells you that when someone says something to you, you might feel something. But let them know that their words and their thoughts of themselves are more important than what someone else's words. But don't say that the other person's words don't hurt. Another thing is also the fact that you can't tell these kids they could be anything they want to be. Not anything. You could be something and you could be amazing at that something, but not anything. This anything principle got these kids thinking, them two left feet kids, thinking they going pro. Man, the dude can't even walk. How he gonna run? Like it's okay, y'all. Be honest, give realistic perspective to set them up for success. Or else your kid is gonna be disappointed. And only disappointed because he was raised improperly or told improperly that he can do whatever he wants. I see that guy from TV in real life, I get to go talk to that guy. Yeah, say hi. And Anthony, to his credit, actually had a long conversation with the kid. But the kid didn't want that because the parents didn't tell the kid what he should really have wanted, which is just an opportunity to say hello to one of your heroes, right? That's good enough, ain't it? Damn, it's crazy. Because I see it like this, too. Sometimes it gets too much for me. And y'all know me. I'm the king of chicken wings. Like, if you get too much, too close, I hit you with one of those real quick. That ain't assault. That's just me extending my arms. But I've learned how to do it. Like, I'm my own bodyguard. Ain't nobody gonna mess with me, so I'm fine. But I see when it's too much sometimes. You know, I got my kids with me. Got my itty bitties. And then somebody run up on me. Run up on me again. Have it at the Charger game this weekend. Come. And I'm like, okay. Y'all got to give me space, though, you know, because I'm here in priority for these itty bitties and for the game, not just for your selfies. Right. So another thing that happens, just to take you guys behind the veil, is when you say one, you see one and he comes up and you say yes to one, you're saying yes to them all. It happens all the time. It takes that one person to lead the wall and finally say, hey, Wiley, hey, Mackie, can I get a pick? Yeah. And as soon as you say, yeah, durner. Durner, durner, durner. But before that, nobody was. Because they like, oh. And this ain't to like pat ourselves on the back. This ain't for none of that. This is just to let people know, hey, I am celebrating what they do, but right now they ain't doing that. So why am I celebrating like they doing that? I got to come at them like a human being, like a real person, right? But another reason, let me give you another reason why I do it. I always take pictures and always cool. It beats the alternative. Yes, it does. It beats the alternative of going somewhere. And frankly, no one cares you're there. No one knows your name. You're nameless. You're anonymous. Whatever. I get that. I used to be that kid, obviously. I grew up like that. You know, like nobody cared. So I know that feeling of like, damn. So I see why people got orange hair, purple hair, 28 piercings, chains coming out their nose, connected to their ears, to their eyeballs, you know? I see why people do that, because they just really are asking for that attention. Not so much the attention of like, look at me, but just notice that I am a part of this as well. Celebrities get that given in abundance. And a lot of times we just take it for granted. And a lot of times we also get perturbed by it. But there are circumstances where you're like, hey, yeah, sure. On my watch, because this is my time, because this is my life. That's my profession. Just tell the kids the right things, man. Tell them to go up to them with an expectation. Say hello. How are you? What happened to that? Remember when we grew up? Hey, how are you? Nobody even does that now. They say happy Monday. You know what? Happy Monday? What do you mean? What are you talking about? What's today? Tuesday? Happy Tuesday then. All right. I'm like, no, say hi. How are you? And now we don't even go by those beats. Run up on me because you paid money to see me and I'm a good actor. Now expect me to have to do whatever you want in this moment. I ain't like this at all. So what's your best encounter with a celebrity? Let me hear what that is. And what's your worst encounter with a celebrity? Like, my best encounter with a celebrity? Probably when I met Ice Cube for the first time. And I was fan man, and he held it. He was cool with me. He did his best to be like, yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, dope man. Yeah, that's me. He was just like, okay. And I'm old at that time. I was just like, I love Ice Cube. He upraised me, so I just couldn't hold it back. My worst encounter was with Carl Lewis when I was little. Carl Lewis, I'm a little track star myself. I run up on him at Mount SAC while he's warming up. Ignorant. Warming up for the track meet, and I run up on Carl Lewis. I said, hey, Carl Lewis, how you doing? Oh my God, can you sign this? He's like, no, I'm warming up, and kept it pushing. And I'll sound like this little kid right here. I was disappointed, I was devastated. Man, I was wrong. Yeah, the dude work it out, like leave him alone. Fast forward 20 some years, guess who's at my party at my VIP table? At this party I had downtown at Prince's old club, Glam Slam. Carl Lewis. And I told him that story. I was like, hey, man, you shook me when I was little. You tried to diss me. And I was like, I'm just playing. You really were in the right. He was like, oh my God, I'm sorry. Coolest guy ever, man. He was in his space, on his watch, on his time, doing what he wanted to do. So respect to that. And do y'all think that, like, celebs are obligated to talk to fans, take pictures with fans? What do you think that obligation looks like? Because I know it's a line. You can't say, hey, how you doing, Captain America? Shut up. Like, we ain't doing that. But at the same time, you're doing something. But you ain't got to do everything you want, too. You ain't got to sign off your life, your will and deed as well. So what's the line? What do you think that celebs are obligated to do? Interesting, man. We saw a Marvel star who was like, hey, man, be real. Not taking a picture with the kid, who I know the kid thought he was a superhero. But kid learned a valuable lesson about expectations and entitlement. And more importantly, if the kid really has his head screwed on straight, hopefully mama and daddy's doing that, the kid got a conversation with Captain America. Salute to that. Say hello. Ooh, that was a perfect push. Got back in for here, man. Love for you guys. As you guys log on to projecttransition.org, you leave a recurring donation, you get this book in the mail, man. This is my life right here. But more importantly, you're helping the community and you're helping the kids. Just go on the website. Check out all the work we're doing in the community. It's amazing, if I do say so myself. And also, ooh, excuse me, Miss Purdy. You can just leave your email, be a part of the team, help us grow. You know, the more people we're in connection with, the more impact we can have. So that's on you as well. And you can just leave a donation one time. One time if you feel like it. All right, let's talk about this Vegas Raiders fan. Came to the game and got involved in a little altercation with a Charger fan, homie. Okay, so I go to the Chargers game this weekend. Get there mid to late second quarter because I was coaching my own team to defeat. Come on, Coach Wiley. What happened to you, Phil Belichick? Woo, let me just get this out the way. My son and our team were the youngest team out there because we all just moved up a group. We got 8 seasons at this division. Y'all better, what Deion say? Y'all better get us now. Y'all better get us now because we coming. Nah, we going to probably win the championship this year. I'm saying it. Anyway, so I'm up in the stadium. You know, as soon as you walk in, I always videotape my kids going up the stairs. Because when they go up the stairs, wow, you get to see the lights. You get to see all of a sudden the stadium. You get to see all of a sudden the field and the players. I'll show y'all the videos. Check my socials. Sick. And then you and then you can see the kids going there. Then go to our seats. Look around. It's dark in there because there's Raider fans. It's dark. It's like 80-20, maybe 90-10. But y'all got to dispel the myth of like, oh, y'all fan base, your fan base is weak. That's why it's like that. No, it ain't. Raiders fans sit there and circle the schedule and say Charger game for show because it's L.A. Simple as that. Like when the Raiders had the Pittsburgh Steelers there, the Steelers fans circled their Raiders game simply because they wanted to go to Vegas. It's that simple. So anyway, they deep up in there. We can see it, all that. Raider fans are cool with me. I ain't got no problem with them. They're a little more animated than the normal, but they ain't tripping. All of those masks and costumes, that's a real person in there. Now, not to say that they don't act up, but just to say I ain't got no problems with them. All right, so the fight began when the Raiders fan confronted a Justin Herbert fan wearing a powder blue jersey and got in his face. You know how it goes. And then the Herbert supporter responded, headbutting him, bap, and then delivered the punch, wop, wop, knocking him to the ground. And then after that punch, he was hit by more punches and then got pushed down several rows of stairs. So then a dude in his Woodson jersey intervened to break up the fight so it wouldn't go any further because it's already looking real bad out there. All right. Now, nobody knows what happened from that point. At least I don't. And we know the Chargers won the game, 24-17, blah, blah, blah. Let me tell y'all what's going on at these games. We used to call them the Yellow Jackets. Y'all know the Yellow Jackets, the ushers, right? And every game, them Yellow Jackets go to work. Every game, they got to put out some fights. Isn't it amazing? The NFL's image, the NFL's like whole togetherness and family. And you would think of the NFL as, I couldn't call it family friendly if you go to the games, but I also wouldn't call it a frat party. You know, like I bring my kids to the games. I see a lot of parents bring their kids to the games. But at the same time, you bring them to the games with a little anxiety, like something may go down. You know that. But you also don't go there and say, hey, we about to go there and be reckless, too. So what's that play here? Let me tell you one. And at the Raider games, they cut off the alcohol at halftime. Most games is after the third quarter. Raider games, halftime. Because every one of these incidents, 101% of the time, alcohol is involved. Crazy. Every single time. Y'all remember this year, a guy got killed at the New England Patriots game because he got hit his head on the chair or the ground and then died thereafter. I remember when I played against the Raiders 20-some years ago. We're talking about Qualcomm. And a fan got stabbed at the game. And I remember reading that, like, I'm playing the game and then they up there watching us play the game, but they got so caught up in it, whatever the in it is, that they had to go to blows, to stabbing. How do you get a weapon in there in the first place? That's a long time ago. So, I'm thinking through all these stories and I'm like, man, I done seen some crazy stuff over the years. And a lot of it's been that Chargers-Raiders rivalry, right? Because we all know rivalries are greater by the fans than they are by the players. Because the players may get traded. The players may have homies on the other team. We going hard, but y'all going way harder, right? So I remember one time, let me give y'all some rapid fire stories. I was driving to the stadium, running maybe on time. It felt like if it was too much traffic, maybe a little late. You got to get there a couple hours before the game, right? And I'm like, damn, it's too much traffic. But it was the Raiders game. And then all of a sudden, the freeway stops. And people always think, like, how y'all get to the game? Like, y'all get to the game. You see that car right next to you? Maybe it's a nice car, maybe it's not. Point being, that's me. I'm in the car, too. Now, I may be tinted to the fullest, because I ain't trying to be dealing with all y'all. Oh, my God, that's so-and-so, you know, whatever it is. But you know, you're doing this. You're seeing the flags go by and all that. It's pretty cool, right? Great experience. But I remember one time, so much traffic, it stopped. Freeway not moving at all. And I'm like, damn, I'm going to be late. Come on, man. Now I'm thinking about hitting the shoulder. Look to the side. Guess what's happening? The Raider fans had stopped the freeway. Start tailgating on the freeway. Barbecue pits out and all. I was like, damn. And I can't lie. As a player, I was hype. I was like, oh, this is dope. I said, I ain't going to be late. And if I am late, this is the best reason. These fools are fools. But then I was like, I looked to the other side and I see some guy. He just sitting there in the middle of the freeway just peeing. Just urinating. Just like, whatever, dog. Like, they took over the city. That was their way of showing disrespect to San Diego. This our town. We stop y'all freeways. We pee on y'all streets, et cetera. I was like, all right. That was crazy. But they don't know how crazy I am. They don't know how crazy my family is, because what used to happen in a lot of my games is my family would show up, especially my mom, and they come up already hydrated. So, you know, we got to be at the stadium by 11. I'm leaving at like 10. My mom and them there by 9, talking about, what's up? And I'm like, it's so funny because they don't understand, or they do understand and don't care. I got to go to work. And they like partying. So they show up with their conchaca vodka, the cheap vodka. And they pounding. They spend yada, cheap wine. And they lit. I'm like, damn, I got to focus and go to work. And y'all pumped. So y'all know why some teams still, even on home games, you got to go to the hotel. Because they really want you to be focused, because you go home. And like I did, I was at home after the hotel. They party. They are not locked in. It's crazy. And then you got to navigate around it. Hey, they never offer me liquor. Like, nephew, you want some? But they already got the links going. They're like, you know, pre-food all going. I'm like, dog, can you calm down? Like, Cheetos and stuff. I'm like, dog, you know I can't stop eating no Cheetos. I can't eat no Cheetos before the game. Just crazy. But I looked at it like, wow. Their mindset is, I'm about to party up. My mindset is, I'm about to go out there and put in some work. And we coexisting, no problem. But then see them at the game, they acting a donkey. And then after the game, coming back to the crib, acting even crazier. And we used to have some post-game parties that were next level. Next level, like ballers for real. I get into those stories another time. But the one time I went to a Raiders game, when I was an active player, this is wild. I worked for the NFL Network, and I was a correspondent. So I'm going to the game, and I got to do work. But I wanted to watch the game too. And I had to do the post game stuff and the interviews. So I went through the tunnel, went through the stadium, went through the corridors, went through the sections like a normal fan. And of course, I got attacked like a Charger should. Like, what up? Dog cursing me. I mean, it felt like all in jest, all in tongue in cheek, all in the spirit of, oh, we got a rivalry, homie. But they're like, Wiley, what the fuck? What you doing up here? It was so crazy, right? Keep it that way is my point. Keep it where we all in on the act. We all in on the fun, you know what I mean? Let's not go overboard with that. Cats getting stabbed, cats getting killed, cats getting knocked downstairs. Come on, man. We better than that. Even though we going against each other, no matter in this situation, in the stands, we all need to win. Winners and losers determine on the field. In the stands, let us all win. Whoa. We're back at it, man. Log on to projecttransition.org. Go ahead. Leave a donation for support of the community and these kids. Then you get this book if you leave a recurring donation. Yes, you will. Every single day, someone's doing it. Make sure it's you. I want the whole world. Yes, my goal for my foundation to help these kids, because I know where my heart and my work's going to be, is to help this community. Y'all got to support it. How do you support it? Leaving a donation. Leave a recurring donation. I send you this book. Leave your email. You're part of the team that makes the impact. These itty bitties, man, they need to know how worthy they are. All right, let's talk about this. Rodney Harrison, my guy, my dog. Oh, love my, I used to call him Chucky. Rodney would hit anything on that football field. And he would go to the echo of the whistle. And I loved it. Dog, he was so good. He was so great. I mean, there have been times where I was like, ah, Rodney coming in. He coming in hot, too. Like, we both going at the Clinton Porters, and he coming in hot. So we know who he is, NBC sports analyst. Now, he had a post-game interview with Zach Wilson during a post-game show, Sunday Night Football. And a lot of people didn't like this, right? So he's sitting there with Chris Jones, the crew, and Chris Jones is basically trying to tell him that Zach Wilson had a good night. Basically, it went like this. Wait. This is Rodney cutting him off. Wait. Did you say Zach Wilson is special? I think he had a special night, but I don't think he's special. Okay, let me take y'all back first. Rodney Harrison is thorough, authentic, no BS, never scared. I think you guys have heard some stories about him, but maybe not know how real he is. That's how he played the game. And it's interesting, people hire former players to be in the media to tell everyone how the game goes, but when they hear it, they don't like how it sounds. Richard Sherman's famous incident when he went at Crabtree, that wasn't well manicured because it ain't supposed to be. What do you think I was thinking when I went at him like that? This what I just said. Rodney Harrison, when he's watching Zach Wilson, he looks at him, he said, okay, he had a good game tonight, but come on, man. Like, chill with the gloss. Chill with the flattery. Like, he's still not good as a quarterback. So there's a line here. We got to figure out this line because y'all said Rodney crossed the line, but Rodney, like, crossed the line. Y'all don't know where the line exists. I'm a former player. Let me tell you for real. And this is one thing about players that are talking today about other players. They all in the fraternity active. So they all kind of take care of each other, which doesn't lead itself and lend itself to being honest, thorough, as authentic as you think. They're all taking care of each other because one, just in case the shoe was on the other foot, you got me, you got my back because I had your back. I ain't call you garbage. So when I go through my funk, don't you call me garbage. We know how it goes, right? Your coworkers, y'all at work, and somebody asks you about Lisa. You know damn well Lisa ain't doing her job like that. You know damn well she ain't filed them papers, whatever. But you take care of her because it's going to be a time where you might not file them and you want Lisa to look out. That same thing happened in the NFL. Rodney does not play that game because Rodney, one, didn't play that game when he played. And two, he telling you how it really goes. And I wish more guys would do that because then you fans will really understand how different we are as players and how different it is out there. Cats out here in the media just saying it like all softy because they want to make sure they don't get too much criticism. The players don't hate him, etc. Hates you? Who cares? You tell the truth? Hate me. You lying? Uh-oh, you better run, because you need to be hated on. Simple as that. So Rodney went there, and we saw a lot of people take exception to it. So Taylor Lewan went at it. He wrote a lot about it. He said that who I think needs to get tested right now is Rodney Harrison. Okay, that was wild. Am I right? Like, Rodney, what are we doing? Trying to get more clicks? Okay, I'm going to stop right there. We got to stop with when someone says something that seems sensational, that seems like, oh, my God, that they only trying to get clicks. Because I'm going to tell you this, the other guy who is not saying something, he's still saying something, and he hopes to get clicks as well. But getting clicks has turned into this old, now you say anything just to get attention. Rodney didn't say anything. He literally said what we all say about Zach Wilson, but he said it to an active player who in that moment just saw that Zach Wilson had a good game and didn't want to kill the kid because the kid been getting killed. But what is Rodney to do? Forget about all of y'all who've been talking about Zach Wilson from hello. And look, it's been that way. His teammates, they don't wear other teammates' shirts, Mike White shirts. They don't call for his benching. He done been benched. They went and got Aaron Rodgers. But Rodney brings it up in the tone of, hey, man, the dude's garbage. That's a problem. Now, let me say why that is a problem. Garbage, the word is tough because we got to keep a perspective about this. Zach Wilson, compared to other quarterbacks, that is garbage, if you want to call something garbage. What he's trying to say, he's sorry. He's at the bottom. Whatever you want to call. He's sorry, he a bum, he garbage, whatever you're going to say. And I don't like any of those words, and if excuse me when I use them, but that's the player in me. Because, dog, you trash. If you play against somebody, you wear them, you give them work, you trash, bro. Whatever that means, don't be so sensitive. However, he did make it to the NFL. However, he is a top pick in the NFL. However, he still got a shot to start in the NFL. So it's like, calm down on the garbage talk. I get that from an outsider's perspective. He still did all that, and I agree. But then it's a relative perspective, like you versus your peers. Garbage. That's real. And we blaming Rodney for saying what we've said and echo. Like Matt Leiner said, this is trash. Our job in the media is to analyze and to critique, not to rip these guys apart, especially after a great game. Complete garbage. Matt's the homie. I love Matt. But he just said Rodney's garbage for what he did, and Rodney said that he's garbage for what he did. What's the difference? Micah Parsons expressed his disapproval. Another active player, so you know he's going to take care of him, even though he probably really like, yo, that dude garbage. To me, bro, that's just not right. I hear you. I always keep my faith in God, and I'm just going to keep this real with you. I truly believe that we are not one to judge. Okay. We cannot keep saying someone's garbage, saying who's special, who's not special. Okay, I'm going to stop there. Well, it's hard to critique. It's hard to keep perspective without saying good and bad. And actually, that is in the Bible, right? The Bible starts off with, oh, from the tree of life, you now lose your absoluteness of knowing or not knowing what you are, because it was just all absolute, to now having the knowledge of the tree of life. So what the tree of life gave you reference. It gave you perspective. Oh, I'm naked. Oh, they're clothed. That's what it did. Before, it was just all absolute. I digress. So if you're going to bring the Bible up, better read all of it, Michael, because the Bible is showing you how we went from an absolute state to our current state of relativity. And the relativity means things relate, but they're different. Good and bad. Heaven, hell. Let's stop. Death, life. So Zach Wilson, man, it's interesting, man, getting killed by everybody out there. And then when Rodney says exactly what y'all say, y'all don't like him. Shoot the messenger, huh? But don't the message. Y'all been the one spreading that message all this time. Don't get so mad at Rodney. But what do y'all think about it? Because I do understand what you're saying. Like, hey, man, garbage? Kind of tough. But kind of real at the same time. Did y'all watch the segment? And do you feel like his comments were inappropriate? Beat it up in the comments. And what do y'all think of Zach Wilson? For real, in the comments. Y'all think he's garbage? Let me stop. Y'all think he's good? You think he's great? Think he's bad? Think he just crossed the line in terms of the verbiage? Let me know what's crossing the line. Oh, I'm in the building right now. You guys know what we do right here. We always show support for our community and our itty bitties out there. So look at there right now, www. Yeah, I'm old school. ProjectTransition.org, log on, leave a donation, recurring donation. You will get this book right here sent to you. Also, support the community, support these kids who need to know how much inner power they possess so the world can see it. All right, y'all, we got a special guest here today. Man, this is somebody who has seen me naked. I always love saying that. Why? Because he's a surgeon. Because he was the doc for my team, team doc of the San Diego Chargers. Great friend of mine. Let's bring in Dr. David Child, pro football doc himself. Dr. Child, what's up, brother?
I'm doing fine. Well, naked, like, you know, you were covered up with the surgeries. Okay, let's not get too far.
Well, I didn't know that. I was asleep, so I don't know what was going on. All I know is I woke up and I felt much better. But in all seriousness, Dr. Chow performed a surgery on me when I first got to San Diego, and I felt so much pressure because I signed this huge deal. Before week one, I break my foot in practice. And everyone's telling me I'm going to be out forever, ever, ever. And I'm sitting there like, oh, I got all this money and I haven't earned it. And, oh, I can't do this to the city, to the team. And Dr. Child, fix me up, Dr. Child. Tell them about that surgery and the prognosis and how we went through it.
Well, first of all, you know, it's the dreaded Jones fracture, right? Fifth metatarsal fracture. And right before the regular season, you get it. And as you know, the earliest recovery is 6-8 weeks and a lot of refracture rate. And I know you wanted to play and everything, and you were the big signing, and the city was excited. So we put in a different type of screw, and I got to give you credit. Yeah, it's easy to say, oh, the doctor did it all. I put you in a position. I guarantee you, you were sore that year. I guarantee you, you were effective, more effective on one side than the other. But it still was double-digit sacks in Pro Bowl, and you made it. You only missed the one game at the start. You played the whole season, basically, except for the very start, and made it back, even though I know you were not 100%. So everyone's like, oh, it's credit for the surgery. Yeah, it's credit to you that, okay, we put you in a position, but you were playing through some soreness and pain and having to favor that foot, but you still put up the numbers and, you know, made it happen.
Yeah, man, are you crazy to talk about that injury, the pain? I didn't practice that whole year, like, because my foot was on fire all through the week. It was like play Sunday and recover all through the week and get mental reps to just go back and do it again. But salute to you for getting me back in that position. It was a lot of work, man, a lot of pain, but we got through it. And it's, you know what? I was watching this week of football, and the reason why we have to have Doc on here is because there's so many layers to the game that don't get talked about in terms of the media coverage, right? Like, sometimes we take you inside the huddle. Then we take you inside the huddle and the helmet and the player's perspective. And I see a lot of resistance at times. Like Rodney Harrison. We both know Rodney. You know I played with him. You know him very well as you worked with him as well. Rodney Harrison says what players really think, what players really feel. Rodney is Rodney, and all of a sudden you get a negative reaction. So I'm bringing you on here, Doc, to kind of talk through some of those layers. Take us inside the organization. Take us inside that training room so we can see it from all levels. And I saw something that happened. What was it? Geno Smith. And he was running. And then he got tackled from behind. And we saw the hip drop. And what's going on with that kind of play and how the NFL is perceiving it?
Well, the NFL did talk about banning the hip drop tackle, and that's basically someone when you're hanging on their hip and you swing your legs and your body weight lands on the back of someone's legs. High risk of injury there. Geno Smith made it through a little bit of high ankle, a little bit of PCL, but it could have been a lot worse, and that's why he was so mad about it. Kenyon Drake talked about it when he was with the Raiders and how that ended his year. And from a medical perspective, the hip drop tackle can be as dangerous as the horse collar. Very similar mechanism. And I look at it this way. If you're talking, say, look, I'm not a defensive guy. And this is my question to you. Defensive guys might say, how do you want us to tackle this guy? What are you going to do? And I get that question. You can't hit him high. You hit him low, like Minkah Fitzpatrick, Nick Chubb, and you're called dirty, right? And where do you hit a guy? What if their head dips and whatever? But you do say the league does protect quarterbacks. No body weight fouls, right? You're trying to legislate that, right, wrong, or indifferent, right? But the hip drop tackle is something that I can say medically causes danger. Now, whether it should be outlawed by the league and what defenders say and is it football is a different question. But from a medical perspective, I would say the horse collar tackle and hip drop tackle and body weight to the quarterback are, I would say, horse collar and hip drop are about the same danger. And body weight to the quarterback may be less danger, but not zero, right? And but I get it. It's a quarterback-driven league. You got to protect them. But, you know, other players deserve protection too. And this was a quarterback, but he was really a runner at this point in time. And that is, you know, from a defender's point of view, you might say, how do I'm supposed to get him down, you know? But landing on the back of people's legs causes a lot of injuries is all I'm saying. That's why Gino was upset.
Yeah, let's talk through that, because it's funny that we're saying it's dangerous or more dangerous when there's only one guarantee in playing football. You're going to get hurt. So it's just pick your poison, which way you want to get hurt. But I understand that you're leading us to this is even more dangerous than the average play. What mechanisms are at play? Because if I see a guy, he's in front of me, I come from behind him, a lot of times I don't have the leverage. So when I grab him, I'm looking to just get him down. And I know if my body is higher than lower, it's going to be harder. So what I do, I grab him, and then I just get weightless. And if I just drop, he's dropping with me. So why is that more dangerous? What mechanisms are at play?
Well, the mechanism at play is when you're coming up on someone, if you hit them square, you maybe get them down already, but you can't always hit everybody square. So when the hip drop tackle happens, you're a little bit hanging on for dear life, right? You're like, right, you don't want them to run through your arms. You don't want to be in the meeting room the next day with everyone, you know, giggling at you or making fun of you in the film room or in the team meeting. You want to complete the play. And your job is to get this guy down on the ground or at least hang on for dear life. But what happens is think about this way. If you ever swing on a fence post, you swing around the back of it. If you go ahead and grab, then your body and your leg swings around. Well, that's what happens. You grab onto someone's waist. You didn't hit them square. You're not leading with your head. You're trying to get them down. And what happens? Your natural momentum swings your body and legs to the behind. And if the runner is trying to escape you, which is doing their job, their feet are planted as they're trying to drive through the tackle. So now you have a planted foot with some weight falling on you. That's no different than what offensive linemen hate. I'm engaged with a blocker, and look, you know this, offensive linemen get mad at the guy next to him if they throw their player into them, right? You're engaged, get thrown into him. That's a way to get injured. Well, this is kind of similar. You're holding on for dear life, and your body weight swings. I'm not saying it should absolutely be illegal. Look, that's a football judgment. But if you're asking me, is there more danger on this play? The answer is yes. Just like there is more danger with a horse collar tackle as you pull someone down from behind. And I'm not saying that the play is dirty. I'm just saying the defender is trying to make the play. So where should this end up? I don't know. But that's why Geno Smith was mad, because the defender can't really help it, because that's where your body weight goes. Unless you say, when I'm swinging over there, I'm just supposed to let go. Perhaps he was mad because he was already in the white, and maybe, you know, it was a continuation, but it was in the white. But if you're in the field of play, the injury can happen the same way. And thankfully, Geno Smith wasn't significantly injured, although he is injured. He played through, and there's a bye week coming up. But this is kind of what we talk about, you know, and this is why I love the fact that you let me invade your show here, because I think these are the fun conversations and deep dive. And I know how your mind works. It's not going to be talking about this injury. It's going to be this deep dive discussion stuff and behind the scenes stuff. And, you know, a lot of things that I'm sure you'll get to. I got a lot to say about the Jamal Adams concussion and him yelling
at
the UNC.
That's where I want to go next. Right now, Doc, we got to go to, before we even give it to Jamal Adams, because I don't want him to be the face of this conversation, but he's going to spark it. Concussions. Okay, when I played, Doc, I swear, I don't remember anyone walking around saying, hey, did you go through protocol? Did you get concussed? We got dinged, or you either blacked out, you got dinged, or you were just like, what? I don't even know what concussions are. Now, I look up and I see that hit on Jamal Adams. And I see him on the ground. He got kicked in the head. And then I see him on the sideline looking like a normal football player to me. At least in my era, that guy can still play. But now he's in concussion protocol. Before we dive into Jamal Adams, what happened yesterday, what changed in those 20, 30 years from when a guy used to have that same injury and it seemed like continued to play? I raised my hand to say one of them. To now, that guy's concussed. What has changed?
Litigation, legalities, CTE association with concussions or repetitive hits to the head, and the health and safety era. Look, I lived it. When I entered the NFL, yeah, we didn't have that. Oh, like guys routinely on the sideline would be, boy, I saw stars on that one, you know, and bop, and boy, I don't remember, and here you go. And I don't believe for one second any player that says, you know, a player says, I've never concussed ever in my career. You don't have a documented concussion. You probably played through your fair share of them. And it's a recognition of the medical industry and in general, and to not mess around with the brain. And so the NFL started all these concussion meetings, and we started, you know, all these rules and et cetera. And I'm an orthopedic surgeon, so I never actually on the NFL sideline evaluated the concussion, but the doctors who did reported to me. So I was involved in all the league-wide meetings and traveling to Washington, D.C. and looking at the latest research. And the problem is, it's just that, what you say. Jamal Adams felt he was fine. Jamal Adams said, are you kidding me? It's been over a year for me to come back, and now some dude that I've never met says I'm out of the game? I get why he was mad. Look, but the guy in the red hat was doing his job. By NFL rule, if you exhibit outward signs of concussion, and there was the stumble, unless you can explain why the stumble happened and you are positive it wasn't a head injury, you're presumed to have a concussion and you are removed from the game, period. So the UNC was doing his job. I love how Pete, head coach, was saying, I don't think Jamal was yelling at the doctor. Some fan said something, this, that, the other. Whatever, Pete. You can spin it how you want. I'm not mad at Jamal Adams for being mad. He's like, I came back from this. I feel fine, and you're pulling me out of the game. See, here's what happens inside the blue tent. The red hat is there to ensure the process is correct and that there's no shenanigans, and to sign off on returning a guy to the game or not. He or she is not there to treat Jamal Adams or any player. They're there to observe. So the team doctor takes them through the thing, the five questions, the screening in the tent. I don't know what the UNC said. They probably came out of the tent, the doctors talked, and the UNC probably said, yeah, he didn't pass the screening, so he's out. Or the UNC said, he passed the screening, but it doesn't matter. We see the visual signs, he's out. So the team doctor tells Jamal Adams, you got to come with me and we got to go to the locker room. And Jamal Adams says, why? Well, for further tests, I'm fine. He goes, well, you're actually ruled out and whatever. And he says, what? Why am I ruled out? He's probably not happy with the team doctor. And the team doctor goes, you know, hey, the redhead already ruled you out. Right? I mean, you're going to take, you know, look, mom didn't let you do the sleepover. It wasn't dad. I just did that last night. So I know that little trick. My 10-year-old daughter, don't get mad at me. It was mom, right? I mean, so right. Jamal Adams, like, who the FRU. I don't know what he said, right? Red hat. I don't even know. How are you ruling out this game? I just can't. And he was hot. How do I know that? Because that's the protocol. And also, the red hat didn't even go to the locker room with Jamal Adams because he knew he was already ruled out of the game. And so I get why Jamal would be mad. And I understand it. I remember one time Dr. Ezon came to me, and this was early in the concussion protocol. So we rule out Takeo Spikes, Mr. Neck out to here, right? Takeo Spikes. Yeah, I can't even do it, right? And love him. He's a friend, the whole deal. But he was not happy. So the protocol was a team doctor goes with him to the locker room for the game. And Dr. Ezon says, he goes, well, fine, I'm out of the game, but I'm going to go out back on the sidelines. And Dr. Ezon says, no, you are not allowed to do that. And he's like, I can't even be out with my friend. But that's the NFL rule. And Dr. Ezon says to me, comes out and says to me, I think he's going to slug me. And I said, he's not going to slug you. If you want security to go in, that's fine. Of course, Takeo wasn't. But he was just mad. It's like, wait a minute, it's bad enough you put me out of the game. I can't be out there with my brothers and just stand there? But that's part of the protocol, right? And players got to understand it. And I don't give Jamal Adams a hard time with that. But let me tell you something else about this before you discuss. One of the things we're going to talk about, I'm sure, coach speak and hiding behind hell. But injuries beget injuries is another theme. Here's my theory from afar as I do the analysis. Okay. I don't believe the quad injury is a beast. And Jamal Adams wants to play. And you played through the whole season and you were not close to 100%, yet you had success in your Pro Bowl year that year after the foot. Jamal Adams says, it's been long enough, let's go. Do I think he's 100%? No. Our six score individual on him still shows him recovering and not 100%. But how do injuries beget injuries? See if you believe this or not. First of all, he's not used to the flow of the game because he just came back. But let me tell you something. Pro Bowler Jamal Adams in the open field versus a fast but very linear runner Daniel Jones. He doesn't juke people. He's fast, but he doesn't juke people. I think a healthy Jamal Adams with a healthy quad who's been in the flow of the NFL season 10 out of 10 times or 9.5 out of 10 times lights Daniel Jones up in the chest. Instead, it looked like, be it a half step slow or off angle or whatever, has to dive low to get him down because he didn't get there where he thought he would get there. Normal, healthy Jamal Adams, bam, right? Down goes Jamal, yeah. Daniel Jones, square shot in the chest. Not 100% Jamal Adams, half step slow and has to reach and dive at his legs and then gets kneed in the head, right? And well, here we go.
It's a trust issue. Like, injuries beget injuries, not just physically. Mentally, you're not in the same place of trusting yourself, so you don't even apply yourself to that same place. Basically, that sixth gear, you don't even try it because you don't believe that you have it. You have to grow in confidence for it. So I see it all the time with my little kids. I coach eight-year-olds. I tell them, get off the ground. They get on the ground because they're scared that they can't make the play. They just dive and just hope. So I think you're right in that assessment, which led to his injury. But to the protocol conversation of this injury. So basically, if I had to sum it up, our era, we didn't have a threshold, it seems like, for concussions. And now they have one. But it seems pretty light to me if a guy can seem to have all of his faculties, but you're going to rule him out regardless if he passes those tests. So two things. One, it reminds me of like when you get a DUI test. I don't know how I know this, but I know this. So basically, they ask you to do all these tests, and then if you pass them all, they still can say, nah, take the breathalyzer. You're like, well, why take the test? If you want to still give me the breathalyzer, what's this about, right? But the second thing about it that makes me wonder is, what are they asking him in those protocol tests that he either failed or are insignificant enough that it doesn't matter, we're still going to rule you out?
Well, the questions in the tent, the screening questions, and you have to take him inside for a formal evaluation, but you can do the screening questions in the tent. The screening questions are not always 100% the same, but they are shockingly simple to the layperson. I mean, everything from what day of the week it is, what's the score of the game, do you remember the play that it happened on and how you got hurt? And it's very feasible for a player to momentarily stumble, yet have their faculties to answer all the questions. It's very feasible to do the finger to nose and the recall five items and the serial sevens and days of the week backwards. And it's very feasible to do so. But the NFL rule is, if you see visual evidence, and this is why the NFL got so much grief about Tua last year, right? Yeah, Tua had some visual evidence when he went down, and it was said to be his back. And then he was allowed to play that Thursday game and then got the second concussion, or the team still says first concussion, whatever it is. That's where the controversy stemmed from, and the posturing. And the reason why you rule players out, and I get from an old school player's perspective, you're on Jamal Adams' side, and I understand that. Like, come on, I'm fine, let's roll. Football's inherently dangerous. But the argument legally is, do you have your faculties to even truly consent to it? That's a legal argument. And the risk falls on the doctors and the team and the NFL if they allow it. And there is such a thing as second impact. Even if you're 100% fine, the next light tap might cause a worse concussion versus if you were fine. And so it's purely a safety mechanism, but it's a very, very, very difficult job. Here's the problem. If a doctor removes the player, let's say Jamal Adams, even without those visual signs, and removes him at the exact right moment and protects him from a second impact syndrome, the player's mad. The team is mad. Well, he's fine. Why did you do that? But if you let a guy in who's fine and tests fine, and they happen to get, and they really didn't have a concussion the first time, but he gets another unrelated bad hit, has a concussion, you're getting sued and you're a horse's bleep for allowing it. And so the problem is, no two concussions are the same. And Jamal Adams, and I'm not saying he will have this, we're just using the example, it's possible that he has latent symptoms an hour later or the next day. At the moment, he feels that he's fine. So literally, you're asking doctors to judge the temperature of Goldilocks porridge without tasting it or touching it, by just looking at it, and you're trying to tell me what the temperature is half an hour from now, not in the moment. That's the difficulty of what it is. And we're doing what we can. I'm not defending him. I never did concussion evaluations. I just know the process. I'm an orthopedist. It's very difficult, and it's very easy to Monday morning quarterback. I am not mad at all for Jamal Adams' fire. I get it. He doesn't understand what it is. He's got nothing to apologize for. But I think the doctors followed the protocol and the red hat and did the right thing for Jamal. And hopefully we sort of explained the process and the behind.
Well, I think the protocol, just to overview it all, is to err on the side of caution. And why?
Yes,
because no one wants to sit there and be in court again and have any of these lawsuits or something worse, injuries to these players, potential death. So I get all of that. But one of the things that's interesting also is watching the game, and I love the fact that you finally took me through the protocol, because goodness, I dog curse every one of these players that leave these games concussed when they look normal to me, because that's how I look when I played. And I'm like, I wasn't concussed. Maybe I was. Who knows, right? But I see something in some of your analysis, and I want to talk about coach speak. And this is something that is dear to my heart. When you hear a coach say one thing and you're like, it may be another, who can decode that? So something happened with Saquon Barkley in terms of coach speak. I'll let you have the floor. Let me know what's going on there.
Well, look, I was on the other side of the equation, right, for 17 years and studying film, and I knew exactly what it was. We use coach speak too. Phillip Rivers and that AFC championship game. Ah, it's just an MCL. Now, I didn't speak to the media, but our head coach did. So I get coach speak. I am not saying that Brian Daboll or any coach is a liar, and I'm not calling them names. They're just doing their job with coach speak. They're spinning the facts based on what's best for the team. And as a fan, that's what you want them to do. But it can put players in precarious situations. For example, with the Giants from week one, we were very clear that Saquon Barkley, in week two it was, has a high ankle sprain based on video. And media says the Giants are saying it's not a high ankle sprain. Or like the video is pretty clear. On Monday, there's a report of an MRI. And we go on our Pro Football Doc podcast and say, it's a high ankle sprain. That's what it looks like. If we're wrong, we're wrong. This is what it looks like by video analysis, having studied the video. But we even said on the podcast, when the MRI results are announced, I'll bet you the Giants don't use the words high ankle sprain because that's a trigger for fans and others. Saquon's had them before. It's a multi-week absence. We don't want to let the Thursday night team know what's happening and da-da-da-da-da-da. And I said, I don't think they're going to say high ankle, but it's a high ankle. The Giants released Saquon after MRI. I thought the Giants would say no significant structural damage. Instead, they said ordinary ankle sprain. And we came back and said, yeah, an ordinary high ankle sprain. That on the same ankle in 2019, he missed 3 weeks. I said, he's not playing on Thursday. And the next week, I'm not sure that he's playing. And the following week, week three, maybe, you know, the third week, maybe he has a chance. So on Thursday, what does Saquon do? He's not happy that he's almost being called soft, right? Like, it's just the, you rolled your ankle, tape it up, let's go. So he protects himself by telling Taylor Rooks on the Amazon Prime broadcast, I have a high ankle sprain, right? And then here you go. It's coach speak. And this whole Monday Night Football, Saquon was not close to playing with the high ankle sprain. Next week is still questionable for Saquon. Mm. And that's kind of what we do. We try and take you behind, to use a Hamilton reference, the staff and the doctors at Sports Injury Central, we were in the room when it happened. So we can kind of interpret for you what is going on, whether it's the decision-making process for Joe Burrow and what's happening with this concussion thing or Saquon. Coach speak is real. Look, I love Jim Harbaugh. I know him well. I don't know his brother, but John Harbaugh is famous for coach speak. The last two seasons for the Ravens, every week would say in December, Lamar's getting close. We'll see. We think he could have a chance. Last, the year before his ankle, this year it was the PCL. And every week, oh, we'll see Wednesday. He's getting close. And every Friday, ruled out. And every week, we're like, he's not playing, right? And so the surprising thing to me is I've been fortunate enough to get a couple Super Bowl media credentials. And I remember going to the Chiefs game, and it was media availability in the hotel room. And Mitchell Schwartz is sitting down there, right tackle for the Chiefs, and he had a significant MCL or something. No one was there, so I wasn't taking away the time from a true media member. And I sat down and I introduced myself. And I said, Mitchell, my name is David Chow. I'm actually an orthopedist. I do pro, just because it's not fair to start talking to a guy without knowing who you are and, you know, how you might dissect him. And he looked at me and he goes, I know who you are. I'm like, should I get up and leave? You know, because I know I've said stuff about him. He goes, no, I know you talk to my brother, Jeff, all the time, and I know who you are. And I said, well, I'm sorry if you don't like what I said. But he goes, no, I actually like it. And I said, why? He goes, because the team kept implying he was close. Yet he was saying this is a multi-week MCL. But he, as a player, can't go against the team and say, hey, I'm not ready to go. Exactly. But he says fans are thinking I'm soft. But you're a voice out there saying this is what he has. And he actually said he appreciated it. And that was something I didn't anticipate, you know, being able to do. And I've actually had a few exchanges with players I've never met on Twitter and otherwise, you know, including Odell Beckham. Hey, you're right about this, but this, you know, kind of thing. Because I think that players appreciate the truth. And there isn't the same coach speak spin that teams kind of have to do or are expected to do, right? And so not hating on them. They're not liars. They're just spinning what's going on. I know one head coach, for example, and I won't call out his name. I know one head coach. I won't call out his name because I don't want to blow his cover.
Protect the guilty. Okay, let's go.
I said, Coach, I know exactly what you do when you talk to media after the game. He said, oh, yeah, what's that? I said, you're not a liar. You want to tell the truth. He goes, you're right. I said, so you get up to the podium after the game and they ask you all these injury questions and you say, I don't know. And then as soon as you come off that podium, you go talk to the head athletic trainer and the team doctor and find out what's going on. And you're completely honest. And he says, yep. Because he doesn't want to give up anything, right? And he doesn't want to lie, and that's his way around it. You know, I mean, Coach Belichick, his way around it is he doesn't answer any questions, and he lists everyone with a hangnail as questionable and plays hide the bacon. It's within the rules. He puts 15 guys as questionable. It's within the rules because these 15 people have gotten treatment in the training room, but there's only one or two that might not play or that's really questionable. But following the rules, all these people got treatment. They're questionable. And then it's a game of hide the bacon. And he actually never lies.
You're safe.
They're technically questionable. And I said nothing else about them.
Well, welcome to Never Shut Up, Doc, because that's what we do. We learn and unlearn. And so you're protected here because we are sitting here trying to decode all the real from the fake. And it's real out there because you just talked about how some of the coaches will have coach speak and you have to make sure that you parse between the real from the fake. But also sometimes they say stuff and they hide behind the health. Like they'll use the injury to really Trojan horse another situation. So Jonathan Taylor comes to mind of like, what's going on with them? Are they trying to hide the health with Jonathan Taylor?
Well, it's unknown the exact truth of the matter, but think of this fact pattern. Jonathan Taylor wants a new contract. The team says no preseason, before the season. Jonathan Taylor comes into training camp to do a physical, and he's saying he might sit out, this, that, the other. The team then says, well, we might put you on non-football injury for your back. And then Jonathan Taylor says, my back is fine. I got nothing.
I remember that.
And then Jonathan Taylor says, but my ankle from last season still bothers me, and I'm going to get some rehab outside the building. So I reported, so I'm doing what I, you know, you can't find me. I'm getting treatment on my own. But the team does what? Shops him for a trade. How are you going to trade an injured player? But then the team then puts him on PUP for the ankle, either shelving him or acknowledging that he's in. I mean, there's just a lot of what we say hiding behind health. What's the real story? We'll find out soon enough. I'll give you another example of hiding behind health. Bryce Young in week two injured his ankle. I believe he did injure his ankle, but he finished the game. The team said it was a second quarter injury. We looked at potentially one in the third quarter, but didn't see anything significant. He ran very well in week two. Leading up to week three, he's got an ankle injury. DNP, ankle injury. DNP, ankle injury. DNP. Was his ankle injured? I'm sure it was, 100%. But probably what happened is they said, young buck, you're our guy for the future. You're drinking from the fire hose. You're not 100%. We don't want to put you out there. If that's Justin Herbert, they're playing. If that's, you know, Trevor Lawrence, he's playing. If that's any number of people, he's playing. But here's a rook who's smaller. They're protecting him. You don't want to bench the guy. He's got an ankle injury. And if you go DNP, you can't expect the rookie to play. And look, his quarterback coach, Josh McCown, came and did that for the Jets. He played as the veteran for Sam Darnold in his rookie year when there was a real injury, but like take a breath type situation. And then what happened leading into week four? Full practice, full practice, full practice. So how do you go from an ankle, DNP, 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 and can't play to FP, FP, FP? So it's a little bit of hiding behind health. The injury's real, but if that's somebody else, they're playing. If that's Patrick Mahomes with the high ankle, he played all last season, right? And it's a way to say, pull back. We want to be safe with you, your future. It's not a loss of confidence. It's anything helping him. Take a deep breath and let's go at it again when you're 100% healthy. Yeah, we know you can push through, but let's protect you. But they don't want to say that to the public, so it's hiding behind health. So there's lots of examples of that.
I love that. Oh, those segments right there. Coaches speak, hiding behind health, and just your general analysis of how the process goes. Amazing. Want to get out of here on this topic that we both share, our love and affinity for Rodney Harrison, but he's under fire right now because he's taking a lot of heat for baiting Chris Jones and saying that Zach Wilson is garbage. Now, it's so crazy and so many synonyms. I've heard everyone in the media tell me how bad Zach Wilson is, but then Rodney calls him garbage, which sounds like a regurgitation of everything else I've heard, and he takes all of the fire. So what do you think of the criticism of Rodney hating on Zach Wilson?
Even on my Pro Football Doc podcast, my guys in the room asked me about that. My first response was, well, you just don't know Rodney. That's Rodney, man. He tells it like it is. That's, yes. You know, that's my boy, man. He doesn't pull punches and hold back. Look, I love Chris Collinsworth, but Chris Collinsworth is a master of heaping praise, and that's his deal. That's great. Mm-hmm. And I love his broadcast. Rodney is, I tell it like it is, my friend, and he did. Now, to me, that's his job as an analyst to ask the questions and tell it like it is. And probing. It's Chris Jones's job if he doesn't want to take the bait, and he didn't. I don't see anything really wrong with that exchange. If you were going to throw a penalty flag in terms of the code, I wouldn't throw it on Rodney for asking those questions. And maybe because I'm his friend and I like Rodney and I know how he is and his background. Rodney is like, you know, everyone's got an older relative that says something that's not quite right. Then you say, oh, that's just great grandpa, right? And I'm not calling Rodney great grandpa. And by the way, in the room, the guy suggested maybe Rodney's just mad at the Jets because Sauce Gardner didn't know who he was on Hard Knocks, right?
Which I've heard that.
Which I find amazing, like that Sauce wouldn't know who Rodney is from Sunday Night Football in his career.
Study your history, whole... Sauce. Seriously.
Lots of history. The most famous, probably the most famous play in the Super Bowl history, right, Rodney? Mm. Besides being, I think, a Hall of Fame caliber player and rings and the whole, well, that's a deeper dive. But anyways, I think the bigger penalty flag came from my guy, Mike Silver's reporting. Not Mike Silver. But Mike Silver's reporting with the 49ers in the San Francisco Chronicle. After the 49ers trashed the Giants on Thursday Night Football, multiple members of the defense were quoted as saying, Daniel Jones isn't worth his contract. Penalty flag number one, talking about someone else's money.
Right? Yeah, my pockets.
Penalty flag number two, a current player talking about a current player. Like Chris Jones didn't take the bait. Credit to Chris Jones, right? The if I were throwing a penalty flag, it would be on the 49ers. You're going to fault Rodney Harrison for being honest? Look, I'm not – then you're saying you're double – speaking on both sides of your mouth. You're not faulting Rodney Harrison being honest, but you're faulting the 49ers defense for being honest. The difference is Rodney's an analyst – you're a current player in the league. You're talking about another person's money, and you're talking about they're basically they're he's trash and he's not worth the money. And you look, you handled him, but you should have just said, "Yeah, we had a good defensive scheme, right?" I mean, I would say that's more of a NFL party foul than what Rodney did. I don't know what your thought is. I know you had a take on Rodney.
No, that's the take. That's the transition that they don't respect, and sometimes people get lost in when you're an active player. Talking about other active players, whatever they say, you just need to look at it like, okay, that is not going to be authentic. They're going to always heap praise or keep it general, right? That's the way to do it because you never know when the shoe is going to be on the other foot. You also know you have to see that guy again, and maybe he might become my teammate. So you never step in it when you're an active player, like rarely. But when you become a media member, that transition includes – telling everybody all the things you didn't say when you were an active player that you want to say now and what those guys really are thinking or saying. So I see a Micah Parsons and I see Taylor Lewan. I see them all saying, oh, that's wrong, that's wrong. Micah Parsons know damn well when he in that locker room and they bring up Zach Wilson's name. They're like, man, he's sorry. But like, what are you supposed to say? That's what he's done so far. But when he gets on microphone or on Twitter, he has to say the nice thing. So I didn't have any issue with what Rodney said. Look, the word garbage by itself is a trigger word. Like, sorry is better than garbage, you know. Not good is better than garbage. Rodney knows who Rodney is, and he always going to tell you like it is. So appreciate you, Doc. We're going to have you back on here next week and every week to decode, give us some coaches speak. Let's see who's hiding behind the health. And just break it down from your perspective.
And so the party message from you is keep quiet when you're in the league, but when you're done, never shut up.
Look at you. Boy, that man getting paid multiple ways on this show. Yes, sir. Love for you, Doc. He knows how it goes, man. Appreciate you. Not only David Child, Dr. David Child, but a friend. Seriously, a friend. Known him for 20 plus years. We've been talking recently. It's been happening a lot around. Guys are just calling me up. I'm talking to them, and they're like, man, I would love to do this with you. And I thought this was a great opportunity. I'm fascinated when I'm around him because he knows so much that I don't know. I just sit there quietly. I'm just like, talk it out. Educate me. Educate us all. All right, now let's funk up some comments. We're back on the show like you normally see it, but look forward to that and more. Let's talk about Dan Orlowski. McDonald's is great. I remember a comedian saying he liked McDonald's and the crowd groaned and he went off. Oh, shut up. You all go there. I'm not the only one keeping them in business. I know. Why do people fight themselves on McDonald's and things like that? Like, oh, I hate for everyone to know I love it. I hate that kind of mindset, that dynamic. Fascinating stories. I kind of had some idea of the shoestring budgets at ESPN. Yeah, ESPN does not take care of their analysts and their hosts in terms of budget, in terms of giving you money for your food and giving you money for your clothing. Nah. You get your little stipend and you get this big salary. The rest is on you. Fox, they do it different over there. Trent Dilfer, I agree with your assessment. Dilfer showed no class or decency on the sideline. No matter the level, you don't carry yourself that way. He embarrassed himself more than the kid he was verbally abusing. Bush League. Yeah, I mean, it's just a horrible look to see somebody lose their cool, lose their temper. And y'all know that's bad. But what's worse is now I'm looking at you like, oh, you're going to come to me one day and tell me to keep composure. You're going to tell me to keep my poise. You're going to tell me this moment matters and to be in the moment. I'm like, you lost yourself before, coach. Not a good look. Here's somebody. I went to high school and college, Fresno State, with his wife, Cassie. Uh-oh, sniper. He's always had an entitled attitude, bad temper, and a very short fuse. Fresno is college town, and he was the guy. So he was rarely held accountable for any of his antics and abuse to others. Sad to see that not much has changed. Well, I don't know about all that, because I worked with Trent Dilfer for many years, and I ain't see all that. But I'm not going to say that you're lying, because this video certainly says different. Here's another one. Imagine if that was Dion. Was he going at white coaches or black coaches? Well, we don't want to make it black or white, but if that were Dion, oh, Jesus. If Dion snapped like that, good Lord, the world would come to the end. Last one on this. Marcellus, I think the worst coaches were actually the best players. They seem to hold everybody to their standards of excellence when most times that's just not attainable. Good point. I've seen that before. Happens a lot. Like, you be like, dawg, ain't nobody else doing it like that, so why are you tripping? All right, y'all. Y'all haven't finished this show. We finished it with a Wiley-ism. Yeah. Doesn't feel good to feel bad. Yes, this hit me this morning. I was looking at my itty-bitties. 8-year-old told him what to do. He's fine with it. 4-year-old told her what to do. She struggled, but she was okay with it. 3-year-old told her what to do. She had a fit. Meh. She does this. She actually literally pokes out her lip like on TV. Crosses both arms. And does it just like this. Not just this. Crying. And I was like, look, it doesn't feel good to feel bad. So don't throw yourself a pity party. Basically, don't sulk. Why are you sulking? Why? You got to do it all the time. Follow the rules. You got to do it. And if you don't, you're going to pay for not following the rules and then still going to do it. I tell my kids all the time, man, you're going to have to do it. So the best thing to do is just get to it. Do it. But if you're not, if you're going to mess up, if you're going to find yourself in that funk, doesn't feel good to feel bad, does it? Right? So why are you still there? Move on. Get to the good place, to the good spot, to the good things, right? So I just thought about that this morning, man, looking at how many times people in this world, you seen somebody, you got the homie that calls you up and usually calls you up more inclined when they got something bad to say, something negative to say about somebody else or something bad that happened to them. You ever call somebody, what's up, man? You good? Oh, man, dang, dog, man. You don't get on my phone, fool. I don't want to talk about this. Or, hey, you heard what happened to homie? Don't we both know homie? Yeah. Well, you call him yet? Nah, I'm telling you first. See what I should say to him. I was like, oh, God. Oh, Lord Jesus. Man, it doesn't feel good to feel bad, man. I don't want that energy. That's like I'm in a process of eliminating all negative energy at all times. That's why I don't have no beef with anybody. Anybody doesn't like me, that's a one-way street. They don't like me. I can't name the person I hate in this world. I can't name the person I dislike in this world. I got to name a few people that did some bad stuff that I have acknowledged. And I have moved on from that. That's why I acknowledged it. I ain't acknowledge it for clicks and to go at cats and talk about anybody. I acknowledge it because, dog, I want you to know that was foul. I caught it. You keep going. Stop it. Now, be the good person that I love who you are. Simple as that. Make sure in your life, no matter what you're doing or what you're going through and who you with, remind them. Remind yourself. Doesn't feel good to feel bad.
All right, y'all. That'll do it for More To It. Check the show notes for all the information on our topics today. Today! Want to keep the conversation going? Let's talk. Find me on all socials at Marcellus Wiley. More To It is a production of Dan Patrick Productions, That Dude Entertainment, and Workhouse Media. The show is executive produced by Dan Patrick, Marcellus Wiley, Paul Anderson, and Nick Pinella. Thanks for all the love, ratings, and subscriptions, and reviews, membership to Wiley's World on YouTube. Keep it coming, because there's more coming for More To It. Talk to y'all hella soon.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.